What number is this, Chip?
Episode 8, we interview Rich Dart, the Monkees touring drummer.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know. Zilch.
Zilch. You're listening to Zilch, a Monkees podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Zilch. I'm Ken Mills, and joining me is Craig Cohen.
Hi, Ken. Always a pleasure.
Agreed. And today, we have the Monkees drummer, Rich Dart. He's also Mickey Dolenz' drummer, and he's on the show today as Sarah and I get to sit down and interview him. And Craig, you recently caught up with Rich and Mickey.
Yeah, on Monday, July 28th, Mickey and his band were in Mays Landing at the Atlantic County Institute of Technology Auditorium. It was a show presented by Stockton College, and the auditorium is a new facility, and it's really a really, really nice facility. It seats, I think, about 400 people, so it's a nice, intimate venue, and Mickey and his band were great. They sounded great. They played great. They were all having a good time, and I was amazed at the size of the kit that Rich uses. He's barely got any drums up there. It's amazing.
You have to think the style of music he's playing, it's more geared towards the 60s, you know.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It wasn't until the 70s people got really insane with the size
yeah,
of their drums.
A million toms, all kinds of different size crashes, yeah.
They had to get airlifted into the drums at some point, you know. They couldn't even, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, but Rich was a really, really great guy. Very cool to meet. He was really happy to connect with me because you had already done the interview for Zilch, mm-hmm. So you had given him the heads up that I'd be looking for him. So he was really cool and a lot of fun to talk to. And I also got to say hi to Mickey very quickly, and he seemed quite interested in the fact that we had done devoted an episode to talking his Remember album.
Excellent.
Right on.
So let's check into our Monkees mailbag. And I'd like you to take the first one today, Craig.
Sure thing. This one's from PD Puddin' Pork, and it's headlined "For Pete's Sake." Wonderful tribute to Peter. I had the great pleasure to see him last year during his one-man show tour. He is a tremendous performer. He had seemingly boundless energy. Got to meet him afterwards. He was so warm and generous with his time and spirit. I hope to catch him with James Lee Stanley or SSB one day soon. And thankfully, I didn't have to attempt to say "Shoe Suede Blues" on the fly.
But you know, once you get used to saying it, it's okay, you know. But it does kind of throw you for a loop. Well, we're glad that you enjoyed that episode, and thank you for giving us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us a lot. Our next one is entitled "Labor of Love" by Super Shameful. What a great podcast. Ken, Jeff, Craig 1, Craig 2, and Sarah do a terrific job of combining personal observations and insights with entertaining audio clips that highlight the genius of the Monkees. Whether you're a casual fan or a total devotee, there's something for everyone here. Great job, and keep them coming. And we plan on doing just that. So Craig 1 and Craig 2, which one are you? Did we ever figure that out?
I think we did. I think I defer to Mr. Smith. I guess it's whoever answers first, normally.
Hey, you. Hey, you guys. Remember the electric company? Why don't you grab the next one?
This one is from Frev1, and it's headlined "Great Monkey Fun." A wonderful, fun, and thoughtful podcast on the Monkees, with intelligent discussions on the group's music and television show, with a dash of the zany fun that has endeared the Monkees to their fans. A recommended listen to fans and non-fans alike.
Wow, very good. And we'll close up on this one today. "Thank You for Doing This" by Big Weezer. I assume that there are fans of Weezer or have an asthmatic problem, possibly. I'm not sure, but...
maybe both.
Yeah, maybe both. You know, it happens. We thank you for listening, Big Weezer, and not making fun of you, just having a little fun with the name. But thank you for listening. "Much like most of you, I became a huge Monkee fan in the mid-80s. My first concert, first album collection, and first band I was obsessed with. The Monkees' deep collection of music has been vastly undervalued and unappreciated by most 60s music fans, so your podcast celebrating them is a real treat to listen to. I really like how you guys are breaking down the album song by song and rating their strengths and weaknesses. Great job. Keep up the good work, and thanks again for doing this. If this podcast makes a few more people into Monkees fans and makes them go buy full albums, especially the Great Rhino Deluxe Expanded stuff, you've done good. And we actually have done that, right, Craig?
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. And it's awesome to see.
Yeah, it's really cool when you get someone who either followed us from your Star Trek show or somebody that followed us from the KISS podcast or something, and they go, you know, I never really gave these guys a shot, but I'm going to check them out. And you've turned some people onto things that you particularly think that they should check out, and I've done the same thing. So, Rhino, don't squash us. We love you, and we're moving product for you. We can't right say on. Much better. So, and you recently were in Vegas. How was that?
Oh my God, it was amazing. I'm still in recovery mode as we speak, but me and Jeff were there for 5 days for the annual Star Trek convention that they do every year out at the now the Rio casino, hotel and casino and convention space out there in Las Vegas, and we had an amazing time. We connected with so many great people. We met some people involved with the classic Trek show.
You met the William Shatner.
Yes, which was something I'm still kind of wrapping my brain around.
Yeah, good luck doing that. I mean, it's the Shat man, you know.
Yeah.
He's just amazing. Love William Shatner. And you met Lieutenant Uhura and so yep. many other people. And you got to hang out with some groovy green girls. So, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really a good time, and you know, I know the Monkees fan base is very warm and welcoming to each other, and it really is like a family. And that really is how the folks at this Star Trek conventions are. We met a guy who had flown in from the Midwest somewhere who came by himself, and he wasn't alone once he got there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that very awesome. Very cool. And I know we're looking forward to going back in 2016 for the 50th. I wouldn't be surprised if we find ourselves there next year as well.
Fantastic. Well, any Star Trek fans that are listening to this for the first time, we welcome you aboard and live long and prosper. And it's always fun to check out groovy green alien chicks. It's just far out. So let's beam aboard with this interview with Rich Dart, drummer for the Monkees.
This is Rich Dart, the drummer for the Monkees touring band, and you are listening to Zilch, the Monkees podcast.
Wow, you're a professional.
Yeah. I was DJ in college.
Oh, really?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I always said that I had a face for radio. I'm sure you know that joke. Today on the Zilch Hotline, we have someone that's very special. I got a hold of Sarah and the guys, and I said the other day, so who else got a message from the drummer of the Monkees? And everybody's like, Mickey called you? And I said, no, not quite. And it turns out that one of our listeners, Mark Nelson, who's a big fan of Zilch, got a hold of Rich Dart. And we have Rich Dart on the phone. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You, of course, are the current touring drummer of the Monkees.
That's what they tell me.
So there we go. Wow, what a trip. Did you ever think that was going to happen?
No, never in a million years. It's kind of a dream come true, because I was a huge Monkees fan as a kid. Huge. Like, know every episode by heart, watched Head every day, have every album and then some, had my walls covered with posters, and here I am.
So you're the real deal.
I'm the real deal, baby.
Because there's a lot of people in this business that it's just a job.
Right.
And
no,
you know,
not me.
So you actually love what you're doing. That's good. How did you become a drummer?
How did I become a drummer? I don't really know. What happened was I was in fourth grade, and the school band director came in and made a little spiel about, do you, you know, next year you guys will be eligible to be in the music program, and do you want to be in the band? Raise your hand. And I raised my hand for no apparent reason. Got my little form and I brought it home to my mom, and she said, well, what instrument do you want to play? And didn't even think about it, just said drums for no apparent reason. And the rest is history.
Well, you know what really sucks, Rich, is that I went through the same thing. I put down drums and they said, well, we're out of drums. You can, you're kind of a big guy, so you can play the tuba. So for 2.5 frustrating weeks, it just didn't work out. But
the tuba has its place.
Oh, you know, the tuba does have its place. But that just kind of goes to show you how important that musical education really is. Get out there and do anything you can to support musical education where you're at, because Rich Dart is proof of being very effective. So support the arts.
You mentioned that you've been a Monkees fan from way back, which is awesome, and I am too, and that's actually sort of how I wound up doing a little bit of drumming. I didn't take it near as far as you did, obviously, but I was curious, how did you first get into the Monkees?
I don't really remember. They've always kind of been there. I was born in 71, so I obviously didn't catch the first wave, but I think it was just through, like, the Saturday morning reruns and the afternoon reruns. And I'm a record collector, and my uncle, who basically taught me everything about record collecting, used to just give me and my cousins all these albums, and I think More of the Monkees was the first one I had, and I just became a fan. And then when the reunion kicked in the 80s, that was just like, woo, the walls have broken down, and I can finally get everything I've been looking for the past 10 years. So it just... they were just there. There's two musical entities in my life that I don't remember ever discovering that they were always there. One was Elvis, and the other one was the Monkees.
Nice.
Yeah, I think all of us that came up in around that time, it's a similar story. It just seemed like they were always there.
Yeah.
And I think the other one would be the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
Which I noticed that there are a lot of Beatle-isms in your playing. A Ringo-type sounding... beats, yes. And licks and stuff like that. So it's very cool. I'm a huge Beatle fan, so I pick up on all that stuff. So how did this happen? Just Ferry came up one day and tapped you on the head and say, you shall be a Monkee, you know, a touring member of the Monkees. How did you get from point A to point B?
I slept with Mickey's daughter.
Well, there you go.
Ah.
No, that's a joke, yes. No, here's what happened. I live in Connecticut, and there's a very, very famous theater in East Haddam, Connecticut called the Goodspeed Opera House, where I was on staff as one of the drummers for the productions. In 2006, I want to say, production of Pippin was put on, and in the role of King Charlemagne was Mickey Dolenz. It did its 2-month run at the Goodspeed. And then it went on tour for 4 months, and they asked me to go on the road with it for 4 months, so I did. And what happened over the course of those 4 months is Mickey and I were the guys who would go out after the show to catch live music everywhere. So we became pretty close friends as a result of that. And one day we happened to be talking about his solo band, and he mentioned he had Sandy Gennaro for a drummer. And I said, okay, well, that knocks me out of the running. He said, but I'm always looking for people to sub, so do me a favor and give me your info, and we'll get you on board. And then a couple of months after that, Mickey called me up and said, I have a couple of dates that I need you for. But unfortunately, I had just signed a 2-year contract to tour with the Broadway show Avenue Q. So I said, I can't do it. I've got Avenue Q. And he said, okay, well, let me know when you come back. And we kept in touch. I visited him when we were in L.A. and all that stuff. And literally the day I came home, he called me and hired me to be in his band full time.
That is fantastic. You know, you mentioned Avenue Q. I know Sarah's a big fan of Avenue Q.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite musicals. And so it's like you drum for one of my favorite musicals and one of my favorite bands. What is the difference... drumming for, you know, a situation like the Monkees versus being with a Broadway show like Avenue Q? What's kind of the similarities and the differences?
Well, with the Monkees, that's a great question, especially considering the organization. The Monkees, and I'm not trying to break down anyone's walls here, they were not a band. They became a band, but they were not a band. They were a television show. And when you play gigs with the Monkees, you approach it from a show point of view.
Right.
It's a very theatrical thing, and it's done pretty much like a Broadway show. Everything, it's not like, you know, we're the Stones and we're going out there every night and, you know, Mickey just decides, let's throw this song in tonight. It can't be that way because there's such a production value that goes into the show that it's pretty much the same every night. We do take a couple of changes, like one day during soundcheck this past tour, they said, oh, we're going to knock out Tapioca Tundra. Okay. And then the next day they said, and we're reversing the order of such and such. But to do that, they have to let us know literally hours in advance, not so much for the band, but for the video production,
right,
or the lighting production, because it's a full scale production. So I approach the Monkees gig as I would approach a Broadway gig. Really have someone calling the cues in the show. You guys can't hear it, but we all have in-ear monitors and we can hear it, and you'll hear, okay, next up is this song, and cue video, and enter Mickey, enter Nez. So that's all going on without you guys knowing about it.
And things like someone changing guitars, and it mentions all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's all mapped out to the, you know, the slightest detail. Mm-hmm.
Now, Avenue Q, for those that don't know, it's my understanding it's kind of like a PG-13 Sesame Street?
More like an R Sesame
Street.
Yeah! An R Sesame Street.
It's a Sesame Street for adults.
Yeah, it's basically a parody of that situation.
And I played that on Broadway for 5 months, and then I did the tour for 2 years for that.
Wow. Now, I've got to ask you a couple questions. This one just kind of blows my mind. What in God's name are the illegitimate sons of Keith Partridge?
The illegitimate sons of Keith Partridge is literally just a local band in Connecticut that I put together to fill in the gaps when I'm home. Uh-huh. And it's a basic early rock and roll band, and we play a lot of stuff from the 50s and the 60s. We throw some 70s and a few 80s things in there. But it's just basically, you know, a local rock band that I put together to play around Connecticut. Hmm. That's all it is.
Well, you're also in a rockabilly band called Cream Corn.
Cream Corn, yeah. Cream Corn has a bigger history. It's a band that I have with my best friends that I grew up with. I've known these guys since I was 3.
And their names are?
We've got Stevie Lightning, who sings and plays guitar. Tim Minutis, who plays guitar. And his brother, Jay Minutis, who plays bass. And I play drums. And we kind of, in the 90s, we had like this weird internet cult following. We had a Christmas album that was out and got a lot of rotation on Dr. Demento. Mm. Was a big deal on mp3.com. I don't know if you remember that site.
Yeah.
And so we had this huge cult following in the internet in the 90s. And it's just something that we do to get together. Like when you and your friends decide to meet up and go to a bar or go to a baseball game or whatever, we book a gig.
Excellent.
And that's how we hang out.
Well, my baby's been chowing on the water after 9:09. Move over, honey, I'm traveling on that line. I say move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Since you're traveling on the one after 9:09. Well, I beckon out to go, and I beckon on my bandy knees. Well, you only fool around, only fool around with me. I say move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Driving on the one after 9:09. Pick up my bags, I run to the station. Real man said I got the wrong location. Pick up my bag, put it right home. Then I find I got the number wrong. Since you're driving on the one after 9:09, I say, move over, honey, I'm traveling on that land. I say, move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Since you're traveling on the one after nine on that, I'm sure. Woo! To the station, the mailman said, he got the wrong location, yeah. I got my bags, I run right home, then I find I had your number wrong, yeah. Since driving on the one after 909, I say, move over, honey, I'm traveling on that line. I said, move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Set your job on the one after nine, oh. Set your job on the one after nine, oh. Set your job on the one after nine, oh, nine.
I'd like to discuss what it's like being on stage as a member of the Monkees, touring band or whatever. I'd like to walk through each one of the band members that are part of the last incarnation of the touring band, mm-hmm. and I'd like to have you tell us a little about each person, if you would.
Okay.
The first person we're going to talk about is Wayne Avers. He was the
He's the guitar player and the musical director, and he is awesome. He is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. He knows how to get things done. He knows how to bring the best out of people, and he's an incredible musician on top of that.
Oh, absolutely, and his solo work is just stunning.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. And he's hilarious.
Yeah, he seems to interact with the guys a lot on stage. Like, I forget what song it is, but he had, like, walks up and taps Mike on the shoulder and shows him, like, this is how it's done during the solo. It's kind of a little weird interplay that they have between the two of them.
That was no time.
God, that just killed. You smoked that, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to play a little bit of that right now.
Stuff
that was one of them. That was definitely one of them. You just slammed it on that. when Mickey cuts into it, it's like, is this some sort of punk song that they're doing? Because when you first hear it, it's like, my God, they're actually playing No Time. And, you know, it's just bang. Just slams from the get-go. Excellent, excellent track.
Interesting that you said, is he playing a punk song? Because my cousin and I came to the conclusion that the Monkees were the very first punk band.
Well, you know, Stepping Stone definitely...
If you listen to their live stuff from the 60s, it may not be technically amazing, but it's very punk.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like listening to a punk rock band.
Yep. I would agree with that 100%. You know, getting back to Wayne Avers.
Yes.
He's been with them for so long.
As Wayne says, he's been a monkey longer than Mike Nesmith.
Ouch! Well, to me, he must be amazing to work with because you don't survive in this business. I mean, it's one thing to have incredible talent, but if you can't be likable and workable, you find yourself unemployed. So
exactly. That's the key, man. I mean, I worked with so many guys who wear their heart on their sleeve or, you know, wear their emotions out, and it's like, dude, your career is not worth that.
Right.
You just smile and say, okay, if you don't like it, you know, you just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be likable, and you have to have a good attitude towards it and be willing to do anything.
I agree. Next up is Coco Dolenz, someone that name sounds awfully familiar to us as Monkey fans. What can you say about Coco?
Coco is a sweetheart. Again, another one of my favorite people in the world. She, of course, is Mickey's sister.
Mm-hmm.
Voice like an angel. She is just has an amazing voice. And it's kind of cool because she's a connection to the original group as well. She's on a lot of the old recordings.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times you can't even tell if it's her or Mickey singing.
Mm-hmm. Right. That is odd. What is she like as a person?
She's a sweetheart. Absolute sweetheart. I can't say anything bad about Coco. Because there's nothing bad to say about Coco. She's just wonderful.
Well, plus she might be listening, so.
No, and plus she might be listening.
Just kidding. Like I said earlier, this is my favorite lineup of the Monkees touring band, and it doesn't seem like there's any dead weight on the stage at all.
No, everybody has a spot, everybody has a purpose. The songs are arranged perfectly so that everybody gets to play their part and nothing is muddled. We're all there with the same intent.
Excellent. This next person also has a familiar last name. Christian Nesmith on guitar and backing vocals. What can you tell us about Christian?
He's an asshole. No, I'm kidding. No, Christian is a lot of fun to work with. Christian has this amazing energy about him that he just, I don't know if it's from the moment he wakes up, but from the first moment you see him, he's just got this energy about him that he's constantly wanting to do something, got to be on the go, got to do this, got to do that. And it fills the void in the band because the backing band is mostly Mickey's band, with the exception of Cersei and Christian.
Right.
And we're all, the Monkees band is a family, but Mickey's band is a really tight-knit family.
Mm-hmm.
So to have somebody who's not a member of that family come in and be accepted and fill that gap where it's kind of like the cousin who was always doing crazy stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, like your crazy cousin Floyd or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's Christian. You know, he does a lot of crazy stuff and he's always wanting to, you know, do something and I can't really explain it other than he has this high energy about him. And he fits in very nicely with the rest of us.
Well, it's one thing to have the name, as with Coco, you know, the, mm-hmm. the last name Dolenz or Nesmith. But he also has the skill along with Coco. Both of them can deliver in spades, and it's fantastic what they bring. And I kind of dig where you're coming from when you talk about Christian's energy because, you know, I don't know him, I don't claim to know him, but if you just take a look at what him and Cersei chuck out, even mm-hmm. just to YouTube, in like a month's time, it's like, when do they find the time to do this, you know?
I don't know, he's, like I said, he's got that get-up-and-go attitude, like he just is constantly wanting to do something.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. Up next is Dave Alexander on keyboards, guitar, and backing vocals. What can you tell us about Mr. Dave Alexander?
Dave Alexander is almost as big a Monkees fan as I am. He's a big fan from way back. He's a little older than me, so he kind of falls back into the 60s Monkees. But he is his playing is perfect because he has every part down. And since I met him, when did I start playing in Mickey's band? 2009? Since I met him in 2009, he's always played the parts exact, perfect. And he's one of those guys that will just sit and listen to it and know what's happening and pick out the right part and play the right part. And he's like that with the Beatles, too.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he's a member of the Beatles tribute band called Glass Onion.
That's right. And he knows more about the Beatles than anybody else I've ever met in my life.
Now, that sounds like somebody I want to have a drink with right there.
Yeah. You should totally have him on your podcast here. He would love it.
Put out the good word to some folks. And
I will. But, yeah, he's great. I love Dave, and he's a lot of fun.
Now, up next is this guy that Christian Nesmith says is a real duty head. Rich Dart, what can you tell us about him? No, next. I had to work that in there. John Billings on bass.
John Billings, I told my wife, if I could play with John Billings and Wayne Avers for the rest of my life, I will die a happy man.
Wow.
Because John Billings, number one, is the coolest guy on the planet. Number two, he's probably the best bass player I've ever worked with in my life. And I've played with a lot of bass players. And he is just, him and I connect without even having to look at each other. It's just rock solid from the first time we played together. There's a connection there, and I can't explain it, but he is just phenomenal. And his resume is out of this world. I mean, he played with Donna Summer for 20 years.
Wow.
Played with Rick Springfield. He lives in Nashville, and when he's home in Nashville, he plays with the Wooten Brothers. So he's just like a monster player, but the nicest guy you'll ever want to meet.
As a matter of fact, we were discussing No Time a little bit earlier. You guys seem to have some fun playing back and forth during that one.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell you're interacting quite a bit, and you're just like rocking out. It's just really cool. What a great
clip. I love my side of the stage. I have Wayne and John right there, and if you look closely, even looking at some of the YouTube videos, we're making faces at each other.
Yes.
We're laughing at our own little private jokes. We have a ball.
Plus, you and John really get into that pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's part of that connection I was talking about. And it's something that happened from day one. It's not like, let's work on this. From the first gig I did with him, we just locked.
I don't think that the Monkees get enough credit for them having a groove in their music, but they do.
Oh, totally. That's why it's the songs still stand up today. I mean, they're amazing songs to begin with, but the production on them and the musicians that played on those albums, whether it be the Monkees or, Studio Cats, there's definitely a groove going on through all that stuff, which makes, like a track like Pleasant Valley Sunday sound like it was just produced yesterday.
I would agree with that 100%. Yeah. And that exact sentiment. There's times that I listen to that song and it does seem like such a fresh, new sounding track, no matter how many times I've heard it throughout the years.
Yep.
And up next we have Cersei Link on backing vocals. What can you tell
us
about
Cersei? Cersei's the newest addition to the band, and she's very sweet. I don't really know that much about her. Mm-hmm. I didn't hang out with her all that much. She's an amazing singer, and she kind of goes with Christian in that whole energy of wanting to get things done. And her and Christian kind of took the reins of the backing vocals this year. And reworked a few things and made the whole backing vocals a whole nother instrument in the ensemble. But she's very sweet. The time I spent with her was a lot of fun. I think I went to Starbucks with her once. But she's very, very sweet.
You mentioned the backing vocals having a new dynamic in a sense. I love it when Mickey will get in between Cersei and Coco sometimes. And it just sounds so good, the three of them together. It's just amazing. Now, I guess I should ask you about the big three, huh?
You can ask me about the big three.
All right. Mike Nesmith, I guess we'll start with him.
Okay. Mike Nesmith is the guy who I know least in the three, in the big three. I get along with him great. He's wonderful to work with. He has a lot of great ideas. He knows his limitations, which is sounds like a bad thing, but it's actually a good thing.
Hey, Clint Eastwood said it best, a man's got to know his limitations.
That's right, man. And his input into the past three tours has been really, really cool because his emphasis is on the music. And pre-Nesmith, when it was the Davey, Mickey, Peter three keys, the emphasis was more on the show. So you have Nesmith, who his main concern is the music and getting that out there and making sure that's presented in the best way possible. And then you have Mickey, who is on board with him, but also wants to keep the comedy element in it. And then you have Peter, who likes to keep everything close to the fans. He likes the fans to be a part of it as well. So it makes a really, really cool dynamic.
Neat. I'm Brett Velez. My new book, A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective, chronicles my experiences with the Monkees from the 1960s into today, along with stories by other fans and how the Monkees touched our lives. A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective by Fred Velez, available on Amazon.com, createspace.com, smashwords.com, Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble Nook, and other print and ebook outlets.
What's one thing that you've learned from working with Mike that would surprise us? Anything that you can think of?
That would surprise you?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's a good question. He's very quiet, very shy. He's one of those guys that doesn't say much, but when he says something, it's pretty accurate.
There was one time I was speaking to Bruce Kulick, formerly of Kiss, and he told me that he understands the fans, but on the other hand, he has a hard time understanding why anybody would want to talk to him. Like, he doesn't see himself as anybody special or anything. Right. And I've always got that same feeling from Mike, that he understands and respects the fans, but the vibe I have always got from him is like, you know, hey, I'm just a guy.
And that's actually, you've hit upon... You hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what Nesmith is like. And a lot of times, a lot of people thought he was being put offish because he's eased down a little bit, but for a while he wasn't signing anything and he wasn't meeting with any fans. And a lot of people thought, oh, he's a snob. It's not that. He just didn't think it was that big of a deal. And he actually could not fathom the fact that people wanted his autograph.
Right.
He didn't think that was such a big deal. And over the past couple of years, he's kind of torn down his wall a little bit.
Yeah, he's kind of realizing that this is an important thing to these people, for good or for bad, or for right or for wrong. There's an emotional connection that people have with the character of Mike Nesmith, whether it's the real guy or not. You know, because we all kind of make our own. You know, I don't care if it's baseball, NASCAR, music, whatever you like. You kind of respect an idealized version of whatever you like.
Right.
You know, as opposed to a person who, like, you know, goes to the bathroom and has arguments with his wife or whoever. They're just real people. Sometimes that can be kind of disconcerting for some artists. And, you know, it would be weird if I went out to check the mail and somebody wanted my autograph. That would just be bizarre.
Yeah.
Well, next up, Peter Tork.
What have I learned about Peter Tork that would surprise you?
It sounds like a teeny bopper magazine.
It does sound like I feel
Rich
like
Dart spills the dirt on the Monkees, what you didn't know about them.
Well, Peter is wonderful, and I love Peter to death. Him and I get along swimmingly. I'm not his son. I just want to put that out on record because I get asked that so many times. No relation. He's a great guy. He really is. He's a lot of fun. He's very musical.
Yes.
If there's an instrument in the room, he's going to hop on it. That's cool, but it could also be like Sam Ash on a Saturday morning. But but he's a great guy. He is knowledgeable about so much. He'll just, you know, if you start talking about something, he'll say, oh, well, did you know how that originated and how that came about? And, you know, he's very quirky, very unlike his character on the show. Mm-hmm. When I say quirky, I mean it in the best way possible.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of that, that goes on to another thing, which you said, we have these idealized visions of who these guys are mm-hmm. because they played a character on a show. And we tend to think of them as that character. And they're not really that character because it was a show. They used their own names, but they were playing parts on a show.
Absolutely. And,
you know, even in the concerts, they kind of try to play those parts. But backstage, they're not those guys.
Right. Which is, it's very strange to have to live as a cartoon version of yourself, in a sense,
right.
at that time. Mm-hmm. I guess that any entertainer has to do that at some point. And he's just an amazing musician. Yeah,
yeah, I saw this video a few weeks ago of him playing the big pipe organ at the Fox Theater in Detroit, and that was just neat, watching him noodle.
Yeah, that was cool. He was dying to play that. He could not wait to get up there. Because somebody had mentioned that, you know, we can open up the pipe organ if someone wants to play it. And he just, like, jumped at that opportunity. He wanted to get through sound check as fast as possible to go up there and play that organ.
So. Wow. Well, there's some other guy named Mickey Dolenz. And you say you're the closest to him.
Yes.
What's it like to hang out with Mickey Dolenz?
Hanging out with Mickey is a trip. It's awesome. He's like the nicest guy you will ever meet in the world, hands down. I've never seen him be mean to a fan. And he is just so down to earth. And again, unlike his character on the show, he's a very introverted person. Uh-huh. He does like to go out. He does love to see live music, which is how we connected. And he just likes to hang out and enjoy his time. He's really, really funny. He has a sense of humor bigger than anybody else's I've known. And he's just phenomenal. He's just a super nice guy and a very generous guy, too. He's always there to help out. He's his big charity thing right now is the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And he's like one of their biggest donors right now.
Nice.
In fact, when we're on the street and fans come up and ask for autograph, they kind of get put off because the first thing he says is, it's $20. And they think, oh my God, this guy really thinks that highly of himself. But then he explains that that money is going towards the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And everything he makes off of his signatures goes to Make-A-Wish.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic if he could set up a website even.
Yeah, well, he's got like a whole eBay store.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
A lot of that stuff goes to the charity as well. And he's just, I can't say enough nice things about Mickey Dolenz. He's amazing.
Tell us something really goofy about Mickey that we don't know.
For the 3 weeks we're on the road, I heard Norm MacDonald's moth joke every day. And it got longer, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with it.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. But with Mickey, it got longer and longer and more drawn out and more detailed and intricate. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's cool.
And in addition to the folks who are up on stage, it seems like there are also some members of the Nesmith clan, especially who are involved backstage, particularly Jonathan and Jessica.
Yeah, Jonathan and his girlfriend Susan this year put the video presentation together. And they did a work of art as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
They managed through various forms of trickery, which I won't reveal, to sync up the vocals in the video with the vocals of the live guys on stage.
Wow.
Which is, if you knew what was going on, is virtually next to impossible.
Right.
And they pulled it off. And there were nights where I turned around and looked and I was like, that is so amazing. How did they do that?
You even see it in the YouTube clips, you know. You know, you think like you're just up in the moment at the show, but no, if you watch it, It's right in sync.
It's perfectly synced, and that's something. I mean, we've had the big video screen for the last couple of tours, but this is the first time the video's actually been synced. And when Jonathan came on board, he called me and asked if he thought it could be synced, and I flat out said, "No, that's not going to happen. It won't. It can't happen." And he did it. So yeah. Jonathan does that. Jessica is basically our stage manager. She calls all the shots. She tells. She doesn't run the show, but she does all the calling. Like, she tells the guys where they need to be, when they need to be there, what song's coming up next. She's cueing the video. She's cueing the lights. She's cueing, you know, the introduction. And she does an amazing job at it. And Jessica is a sweetheart. Her and I get along swimmingly as well.
And she also can play the guitar and has joined.
Yeah, the last night of the tour. That was awesome. Her and Jonathan came out and played guitar on Listen to the Band and Pleasant Valley Sunday. Wow. And I wrangled our tech, Austin, on stage, too. And he came out, and he's like, "What?" And I said, "That tambourine." He goes, "What about it?" I said, "Pick it up." He's like, "Why?" I said, "Play it." And then John Billings blocked him from getting off the stage. So we forced our tech, Austin, to come out and play on stage as well.
Thank you.
some of the versions are so true to the record that they're scary, but they still have an energy to them, mm-hmm. which I was always disappointed. I remember the first time that I saw the Eagles back in the day. It was like, you know, you were so far away that it looked like, you know, guys on a postage stamp, but then it sounded so perfect that it sounded like, well, why did I, you know, spend this money to come here and hear the record? But when you are at your guys' show, it just mm-hmm. it cooks. It just snaps. There's a crackle and an energy to it. And then there's the reinterpretation of some classic tunes. Like, for mm-hmm. example, whose idea was it to do the Buddy Holly take on The Kind of Girl I Could Love?
That was Nesmith's idea.
Well, since he wrote that, he probably was copping from Buddy Holly anyway, so maybe...
Right. Well, the story goes, and this happened in 2013, when we did the 2013 tour. We were in rehearsals, and he called me and Wayne into this little room, which he deemed his office. It was just a room in a rehearsal studio. Uh-huh. He said, well, we're going to add this song, Kind of Girl I Could Love. And I said, well, I know that tune. He said, but I don't want to do it the way it's on the record because that's not the way I envisioned it. When I came into – yeah, this is my Nez impression. When I came into the Monkees, I wanted to write some songs, but I didn't know how to write a pop song. So I thought, who writes a good pop song? And I thought Buddy Holly. So I basically thought of Words of Love.
Mm.
And I said, okay, but Words of Love has like this little Latin rumba beat to it. And he said, but I didn't want that. I want like more of a Peggy Sue type feel to mm-hmm. it. So it's a conglomeration of Peggy Sue and Words of Love.
And it's definitely there. Let's listen to that right now. Trust me, I would love to hear it the way it was recorded as well, but mm-hmm. this stands up alongside it.
I agree. The original is great, but there's something about it that's just kind of muddled. I don't know what it is. It's one of those tracks I skip over on More of the Monkey.
Yeah.
Well, I think that has something to do with the production. On the other hand, the drums in that original version is all over the place. Kudos to the original drummers on that. But yeah, so it's great to hear some of these reinterpretation. So you say it's Nez responsible for most of these, or
for, well, that one and Sweet Young Thing. That was
which I love. Yeah.
And I thought it was really cool in the video presentation where, as the beat, every beat is another click on that.
The ViewMaster reel.
Yeah, the ViewMaster reel, another click.
That's awesome.
Click.
Yeah.
Click. It's just, and it's great. It was ingenious that whoever put that together, where they grab all the girls from the TV show and just.
That was Jonathan and Susan. They did all that.
Excellent work. Excellent work. Is there a favorite song that you have?
That I like to perform or that I like to listen to?
Well, let's do both.
I think my favorite Monkees tune is Pleasant Valley Sunday.
Yeah, it's a classic.
The one I like performing the best is probably Porpoise Song.
Oh. Yeah.
Which is up there on my favorites anyway.
Right.
But I like it for the interplay that I have with Mickey at the end of the song.
Yeah, I noticed you guys kind of drumming licks at one another.
Mm-hmm. That kind of, it started in 2012. It actually started in 2011, but I wasn't the drummer on the 2011 tour. That was Felipe Torres. Mm-hmm. And it started where Mickey and Felipe were trading licks just on a few songs, but it wasn't like a highlight of the set. And then in 2012, we started doing that, and Mickey got more and more into it. And then last year we did it. And this year, it was such, Mickey wanted it to be such a feature of the show that he brought the backing band out of the dark. Because for the past 2 years, we've been in the sidelines in the dark.
Right.
And this year he said, not to toot my own horn, his exact words were, we want to feature Rich.
Oh, wow.
So they put us, you know, in the spotlights this time. And we made the biggest deal out of that. And to me, to look over and see him having such a good time with that is just the most amazing thing to me, because I had to literally reteach all the drum parts to Mickey.
Wow.
He's the first person to tell you, I'm not a drummer, I'm an actor. So,
but he acts pretty good at playing the drums.
He does. He does a great job.
He does.
He pulls through and he's solid. His playing is solid and he gets better every day. And, you know, I'll tell him, I'm like, man, you had that great fill. And he just laughs and says, not bad for an actor. So, you know, but and it's so much fun to have that interplay with him, because we get along so, so well anyway. And we both have such admiration for each other's talents. He came up with the whole shtick. I don't know if you remember it, or if you weren't there, here's what happens. At the end of Porpoise Song, during the big outro from the single version, we trade drum licks. So we play a little bit, and then I do a drum fill, then he does a drum fill. And he came up with this great idea that I was going to play a drum fill that would just totally smoke him and that he couldn't do. And then he stands up and looks at me all indignantly and then sits back down, and when it's his turn, he just goes, bop!
Bop.
And that's yo. So we did that up until like the last four or five shows. And I did a fill, and he does the thing, stands up indignantly, sits back down, and then just starts hitting everything in sight. It's like bang, bada bang, bada boom, bada bang, bada bang, bada bang. And the first night he did it, I couldn't play. I was dying. I was laughing so hard. And he did that for the last couple of shows, and it was hilarious. But that's my favorite moment in the show.
Well, you know, I don't think Mickey will ever be confused with Stuart Copeland or something like that, or Buddy Rich. But the guy does damn good. And,
he does really well.
You know?
Yes. Kudos to the man.
And it always blows my mind, because I'm a right-hander, and he's a right-hander, right?
He's a right-hander, but left-footer. There's something wrong with his legs.
Mm-hmm.
He was born where one leg is longer than the other, just by like a minuscule part of an inch or something like that.
Yeah.
But it affects his strength in his right leg. So his left leg is stronger than his right. So whoever was teaching him, which happened to be Coco's boyfriend at the time in 1966, said, you know, well, why don't you just play with your left foot and your right hand? And that's how he developed that. It's tricky. I've sat down at his kit before. It's nuts.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I'd just sit there and like, this is not right for me, you know. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing that his mind could work that way. Well, it's very admirable. Very admirable.
Careful! I may never play the guitar again!
But you're the drummer.
Oh, that's right. Okay, go ahead.
Well, Rich, we'd like to thank you on behalf of everybody here at the Zilch staff. I know Sarah was thrilled to have be part of this interview, as was I. Shame the other guys couldn't be here, but I just want you to know that we're in your corner, and anytime you want to promote anything, Zilch is here for you, and we'd like you to come back on the show at some point. And there's one big question I have to ask you. Do you think that we may be seeing someone coming to our town, like maybe the Monkees on tour again sometime? Any rumors, any thoughts?
And I say this with all honesty. I tell everybody the same thing. We're the last people to know.
Yeah.
The fans know before we do, because we don't get hired until the contracts are officially signed.
Mm.
For example, working with Mickey, I don't get called till the contract's signed, but the show might already be announced.
Right.
So I'll check on check on Polestar every once in a while and
see if
Mickey has shows coming up, just so I know to put them in my date book.
Yeah.
Because that gets leaked before we even know about it. So we're usually the last people to find out.
Hmm. Now, to your knowledge, do you know if any audio or video recording has been done, like along the lines of a live CD / DVD set or anything?
No, none of that was done.
That is so sad, because this band is just cooking so much. I hope that if you guys do another leg that somebody, you know, maybe somebody at Pacific Art even decides to do it just for fun. And
A lot of it is with the licensing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they don't own the name.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So they basically have to pay to go out as the Monkees. They have to pay to use their own name. So, you know, that's part of it. And then to get all the licensing for the songs from all the original songwriters.
Right.
And it's a big pain. I mean, Mickey just put out a live album last year. And I know he had to go through hoops to get that out there. And, you know, there's not even the word Monkees on the package, but just to get all the rights to the old songs.
Well, it would be a shame if this does not get documented, because this lineup is smoking and you are a huge part of that. And I want to thank you for being on Zilch. Please tell the other folks in the band and Mickey that we'd love to have everybody on.
I will do. I will pass it along. And thanks for having me.
All right, sir. Well, thank you so much, and God bless.
Yes.
All right. Thanks. Bye, guys.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye.
And once again, we're taking another trip into the Monkees cover corner. How are we doing, Sarah?
Doing good. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. You know, you never know where you're going to find the Monkees, and believe it or not, you're going to find the Monkees on a Christian album that came out 25 years ago, and the band is celebrating their 25th anniversary, and they're actually reuniting for a tour, so this is kind of a little synchronicity here, but the band is called Jacob's Trouble. And the name of their album 25 years ago was called Door into Summer. You know, when you think of Monkees music and faith-based album, do you think lyrically that this would work?
Yes, actually. They are very spiritual lyrics in their way, and it made total sense for a Christian group to be covering the song, actually.
And I saw this band twice back in the day, and they were lots of fun. They would wear 60s type clothes, and they would play Beatles music and the Birds, Turn, Turn, Turn. And I remember hanging out with them one time before the show, and they just would just play riff after riff of Monkees tunes, because we were just sitting around talking about our love of all things Monkees. And here is their take on Door into Summer.
As
Sarah, what'd you think of that?
I love this cover. It's mostly very faithful to the original. Mm-hmm. It kind of takes some interesting little twists and turns throughout the song. And you can tell it's 80s because you can hear that little electronic note in the keyboard and things like that. But I think this is a very faithful cover. And I think it fits this group. So I'm totally unfamiliar with them, but I think it really kind of fits their style.
It's always neat to see where the Monkees are going to appear or where the songs that the Monkees later covered themselves came from, so this is very cool.
That's a trip. Tune in next week, ladies and gentlemen, for another Minute Short.
Hello.
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 Oh, with the monkey.
I hate these kids.
Monkeys is the craziest people.
And of course, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/ZilchMonkeysCast. And you can also find us on Twitter at ZilchCast. See you there. We also have some cool Zilch shirts available for sale on the Facebook page, so check it out, and if you have any questions, ask around, and we'll point you in the right direction. And stick around after the credits on this episode of Zilch. Akira Suzaki created this really cool thing called Title Call, in which he took the name of every Monkey song and splice them all together. Check it out. So for now, take some time to monkey around.
Here we go. Walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from
everywhere we meet. Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burr. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Hey, hey, we're the Monkees!
I wanna be free.
Tomorrow's gonna be another day.
I love you and
take a giant step out.
Take the last train to Clarksville.
This just doesn't seem to be my day.
Let's dance on.
I'll be true to you.
Sweet young thing.
I'm gonna buy me a dog.
Love comes knocking at your door.
Mary, Mary,
hold on there.
Auntie Griselda,
I'm not your stepping stone.
Look out, here comes tomorrow.
And a girl I could love.
The day we'll fall in love.
Sometime in the morning.
Laugh,
I'm a believer.
Me. I'll spend my life with you.
Forget that girl.
I think you got it now, Mickey.
You just may be the one.
Shades of gray.
I can't get it off of my mind.
I'm understanding, Mr. Webster.
Girlfriend.
Zilch.
No time,
no time.
A distant night bird mocks the sun.
Why don't you cut your hair?
Salesman,
she hangs out
the door into summer.
Love is only sleeping.
Cuddly toy.
What?
Hard to believe.
What am I doing hanging around?
Either Percival Patterson had a big name, Porky.
Pleasant Valley Sunday.
Find questions but no answers.
Don't call me
Star Collector.
Dream world.
Somebody stole them.
We were made for each other.
It cannot be a part of me, boy.
Daydream.
Upon my feet,
the ball stops.
Game.
Me without you.
Don't wait for me.
You and I.
While I cry.
Teardrop City.
Girl, I left behind me.
A man. Just a man without a dream.
Shorty Blackwell.
Little girl, because I told you I'd come back. Him the same question.
Looking for the good times.
Ladies, a society.
Listen to the band.
A little girl goes out.
Mommy and daddy.
Over back and dance. Pillow time.
Oh, mama.
Ticket on a ferry ride.
You're so good to me.
It's got to be long.
Never thought it peculiar.
Do it in the name of love, Lady Jane.
A little bit of me, that's a little bit of you.
A girl that I knew somewhere.
Going down
D.W. Washburn.
It's nice to be with you.
Christmas is my.
Christmas.
Anytime, any place, anywhere.
Kiss that one thing, that one thing.
This is now
heart and soul.
I know the whole wide world.
Long way home. Secret
heart.
I'll love you forever.
Girl.